Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to take your social technology strategies to the next level? Then do we have a show for you. Social Geek Radio co-hosts AK Stout and Deb Evans chat weekly with innovative technology folks who share their experiences, tips, and tricks to help you take your business to the next level. Social Geek Radio is brought to you by Saying It Social and Deb Evans Consulting, LLC. To learn more about their unique services, including but not limited to speaking, consulting, and training, visit AK Stout and DebEvansConsulting.com.
It is a wonderful Wednesday night. I guess it could be a wacky Wednesday. I haven't seen or done anything wacky yet today, so maybe we can show our true colors tonight. But this is Deb Evans, and we have...
Hi, this is AK coming in from Baltimore.
You know, a week goes by so quickly, but I know we were just here a week ago tonight.
I know. I think looking forward to Social Geek Radio makes my weeks go by faster, I think.
It does. I like having it on Wednesdays because it really does break up the week. So, but I have to tell you what I'm doing now on Tuesdays, where I just love Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I have joined a new IRL networking group that I drive downtown to Houston every Tuesday now to meet with the Houston Business Executives Women in Sales Group. And
wow.
This is the greatest group of ladies that I think is just a perfect fit. You know, in the last year, I've been trying to find a good networking group and something to do, because when you work from home and you're in that office all day, it's like I need some real people. I love my online friends. I love all the work I do, but real people. And we've got a Facebook group, so we're talking all week. So Tuesday's exciting, and then we've got Wednesday for Social Geek Radio. So, yes, I'm happy camper. What are you doing that's so exciting now?
Oh gosh, just lots and lots of work. Just keeping up with my clients, which is good. I get to say that. And I can brag about a couple of my clients. Baltimore has this Best of Baltimore campaign that they run, I guess, every summer. And Baltimore Magazine publishes, you know, who the winners are for the best of in each of these categories. And two of my clients won in their categories. So the magazine actually doesn't go out on newsstands until Friday. But, of course, they've notified the winners. And so we're doing a lot of promotion and things around that. So it was very exciting.
Very fun. Good.
Yeah.
And you have found a wonderful guest for us tonight.
I did, yes. Our guest is Katie Roberts, and I'll let Katie tell us all about herself for a second here, but I wanted to tell everybody how Katie and I met, which was last summer, just a little after this time. We were on the Grand Prix of Baltimore social media team together. So when I had known who Katie was in cyberspace and on Twitter, but I didn't get to meet her in person until we started doing these events for the Grand Prix. So as soon as I met her and we started speaking social media speak, I was like, oh my gosh, she knows her stuff. So we kept in touch, and I followed her, of course, on all of the networks, and I see all the cool things she's doing. And our topic for tonight, Facebook ads, is something I'm getting more and more involved in with the clients that I'm working with. So I wanted to learn about it. So I thought, who better to ask than Katie? So Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited about this.
You are welcome. So go ahead. What I really want to hear first is what we have in your bio here on the show about, tell everybody where you work, what you do, and I know you're going to get into more details, but just a little bit about the growth numbers that you indicated on your bio here for going to stand for the communities that you manage.
Sure. And I do have to just say thanks to AK for giving me a ride home across the city in a monsoon during the Grand Prix that week.
Yeah, that was
crazy that day. So I work for Laureate, who is the world's largest network of higher education institutions, and we have a handful of universities that are focused on a global presence. So we market to prospects globally, and we have campus-based, we have online universities as well. So I sort of mostly sit in the online university world. So I handle a couple different universities within our Global Products and Services division. One of the flagship universities that we have is called Walden University. You may be familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And Walden University, I started there about 2.5 years ago. I lead a charge on the social media strategy for all these different universities. And when I started, we had about 6,000 fans on Facebook. And since then, we've been able to grow the Facebook community to over 160, I think we might be at 162,000 now, actually.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We have
I'm sorry.
I know. It's pretty cool, I have to say. We have about 50,000 students, about 60,000 alumni. Our focus at Walden University is mostly master's and doctoral degrees. We do have a bachelor's degree series of programs as well. But as you can imagine, the master's and the doctoral degree, it's a little bit more mature of an audience. So there are some real challenges about growing a community around a very non-traditional Facebook demographic. So we had some challenges along the way. We kicked off Facebook advertising about 6 months into starting at Laureate, and we found some massive successes out of the gate, and we were able to grow our community by anywhere from 200% to 300% every 6 months.
Wow.
So in about 2.5 years, we've grown it from 6,000 to 160,000.
How do you manage growth like that?
That is a fantastic question. So I will say that, you know, if you get into Facebook ads, and one of the ad types that we have that's available is what we call like ads or like campaigns. It's a way to target ads to encourage people to become fans of your community. And then there's also page post ads, which you want them to engage with the post itself, but you often get community growth as a byproduct of that as well. So if you jump into the pool of Facebook advertising, you have to be prepared to scale as a result of that. So one of the, you know, we didn't scale our team. We are still, I say it's a relatively small team. There's two of us. I realize that a lot of marketing teams, the whole marketing team is two people. But when you have a community that big, you definitely need some dedicated resources that specialize only in social. So it's very difficult to keep up. You have to be prepared to scale your team, your resources, to stay bubbly for 162,000 people on a daily basis can sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm just not feeling it. And I reach out to a team member and I'm like, hey, can you carry me today? Because I'm not feeling it today.
Well, that's good. So you mentioned a couple of different types of ads, but I know there's more. Can you kind of just run down the line of the various types of ads that there are?
Sure. So there's two types of ads that are targeted at community growth and engagement. So if one of your goals is to increase your community size or to get the community to engage more, which ultimately impacts your EdRank algorithm and other display functions, those are like ads and promoted page posts. You can also run sponsored stories. Sponsored stories are starting to be fizzled out by Facebook. They haven't completely dissolved yet. So we still leverage sponsored stories. Then you have offers are now no longer available as the offer in the form that they used to be. They're only available as a sponsored ad type, and it's only in the Facebook Manager and Power Editor. There's something called I'm sorry.
I just wanted to ask you. I noticed that I was trying to run. Well, on some of my pages, and maybe it just hasn't been phased out for me, I see the author button when I'm doing a post. But I noticed for those, you have to pay some ridiculous amount of money in order to do it through the like your timeline. And then it prompts you and it says, if you don't want to pay to post your offer, and then you have to go into like the ads manager.
Yeah, so basically what Facebook did is they piloted it for free, offers for free, and a way to get more interest in offers, brands could take out promoted page posts and sponsored stories against the offer or the post itself to gain offers, and it was really successful. I was thinking my phone dropped there for a second. It was really successful, and it looks like they've switched it to a paid-only model.
Of course. Sorry to interrupt, but I was just making
sure. Yeah. No, that's fine. So another ad type is what are called unpublished posts, or they were formerly called dark page posts.
Oh.
Or dark posts, which is a little morbid sounding sometimes. An unpublished post it looks like it's been published from your brand, from your company page in a newsfeed as if you are a fan, but they target non-fans. So it's a little sneaky way to get inside or in the newsfeed of non-fans on Facebook that might have some common interests that you would target.
Then there's
your traditional direct response ads. I think most people are familiar with those. Those are mostly ads on the right-hand side where there's a title, there's a description, and there's a link that's taking you to a landing page or a website or something that's not a branded Facebook page.
Okay.
Then there's app promotion ads. So if you have an app, a Facebook app that you're promoting, like Farmville took off by way of app promotion.
Right.
App promotion ads require a person to interact with an app for 3 minutes, a minimum of 3 minutes, and then you can advertise against their friends of fans. So that's a little bit of a tricky one.
Okay.
And then there's two other things that I sort of classify as an ad type, although they're not really ad types. So there's something called Facebook Exchange, and that's a way to take out ads based off of cookie behavior that's happening on a website.
Oh, okay.
And then it's kind of actually pretty cool. It's really great in the retail environment and consumable products. And then custom audiences. This is actually something we're doing more of on a regular basis, where you can leverage your customer database or your prospective database and tee up ads to those audiences on Facebook. It's actually pretty cool too.
So before we go any further, I think one thing that we need to clarify for the audience is sort of the reason for, not the reason, there's many reasons for doing the ad, but you mentioned the Facebook EdgeRank algorithm. And I think a lot of people still have the perception that when they post something on Facebook, if they have fans, the fans see it, which I know is certainly not the case. Can you explain a little bit of what's happening there with the EdgeRank and what exactly that means?
Yeah. So you're right. A lot of community managers and just business folks in general think that if you build it, they will come. And
right.
if you put it up on your Facebook page, that everyone that's a fan is going to see it. And the reality is that's not the case because we know that not all fans are logged on to Facebook 24 hours a day and are checking and seeing their whole news feed all day long. But you mentioned the EdgeRank algorithm, which is this really secretive algorithm that the only people that really know what it is are the Facebook teams. But there's a couple companies out there that have figured out their version of the EdgeRank algorithm. So there's consistencies in different companies that have sort of tweaked what the Facebook algorithm, the EdgeRank algorithm is. And you just know that if you're trying to find out what your EdgeRank algorithm is, it's consistent for that company. But if you go to someone else that calculates it, it might be a little bit different. So the EdgeRank algorithm is sort of based on a couple different criteria. And each criteria is weighted a little bit different. So the short and tall of it is a Drunkle algorithm determines the probability of the posts that you put up on your company page, the probability of it being displayed in your fans' news feed. And so there's numbers that float around from time to time that it's anywhere from 2% of your fan base to as much as 18% of your fan base will organically see your message.
Which is still a really small number.
Still a really small number of your fans. And if you have a small community, you know, it's really the law of diminishing returns kicks in at some point. So a really good way to get out in front of your fans is to take out Facebook ads with promoted page posts. The good news is that promoted page posts are relatively low competitive bids. So you can get in front of your fan base with a fairly small budget. And then the good news is you can start to target friends of fans and other people that may have similar interests in your product and share the load altogether with a competitive bid across the whole yard there.
Now I do have a question for you about that, and this is something that I've been reading a little bit about, and there seems to be some debate about those posts. And I think recently for a lot of people who don't look at it all the time, you're also referring to, like, when you put a post up and you see that link that says boost post, that's the promoted post that we're talking about, which, of course, you can do from the ads manager as well. But so when that promoted post option first came out, I know that there was options where you could pay to have it seen by just the fans of the page, and then you could choose fans and friends of fans. And that was all well and good, because if you didn't want to post it out to people who weren't your fans, you didn't have to. And then they switched it. So now, if you are going to do that method, as you mentioned, it all goes to fans and friends of fans all at the same time. So the debate I've been hearing has been that while it's good, and like you were saying, that you actually can get some community growth from that visibility because it's going to people who aren't already fans as well, that some people are seeing those and they are marking those posts spam. So if it's any posts marked as spam, it's going to hurt your page. Do you have thoughts on if people do that, you know, is it bad to do it too much? Should you do it just every once in a while? Do you think that there's enough people that are marking them as spam to actually hurt pages?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good point, and I'm not sure that a whole lot of people realize that that happens.
Right.
So you can hide a post in your newsfeed, and you can report it as spam, and both of those count as an engagement strike against your Edgewrinkle algorithm. So the more complaints that you have against the posts that you're publishing on the paid side, it does have an impact on your Edgewrinkle algorithm. The stuff that I've read, it's more hurtful if the spam is on an organic post versus a paid post.
Okay.
So if someone is a fan of your page and they see the post and they file it as spam or they report it as spam, that has a bigger impact on your Edgewrinkle algorithm than if you weren't a fan and it was a page post or promoted post.
Right.
So the good news though is you don't have to serve up promoted page posts to the news feed. You can have them so that they only show up on the right rail. Or
okay.
You can test it or split it so that your fans get the right rail plus the news feed. And then friends of fans and what I call unknowns based on interest categories only see the ads on the right rail as well. So you can report an ad as being irrelevant on the right-hand side, but it's not as drastic as if you were to report it as irrelevant in the news feed.
I gotcha. Cool. Does that have anything to do with what you mentioned about the I was still a little bit unclear about the unpublished post. Is that what happens when you do that promoted post to friends of fans, or is that something different?
So a promoted, so you can create a promoted page post to friends of fans and unknowns. An unpublished post is basically the same thing as if you were to post it from your page, but if you go back to your page, you won't see it there. So if you were to go to facebook.com/sayingitsocial, that post would not be there. That's why it's called, that's why it's sort of considered unpublished, because it's not on the company page.
Cool.
So they're commonly used in lead gen or brand awareness campaigns, or universal market research surveys. Some large brands might do market research and target a large swath of people in the news feed using an unpublished page post on behalf of a brand.
Okay, so, yeah, definitely. Thank you. So we have all of these different ad types, and our audience is very diverse in terms of size and type of business. So what would be your best advice for somebody who's just starting out of the gate with Facebook ads? Where should they begin?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a couple different ways to create ads, so it's important to understand that there's different methods for creating ads. One is the boost post or the promoted post button that you see as an admin of a page. If you were to start with some engagement ad strategy, that was implemented by Facebook for small businesses. You pay with a credit card, or I'm not sure if you can get invoiced on that, but you usually have a credit card and all the ads get billed to the credit card.
Right.
A different way to manage ads is through the Facebook Ads Manager, which if you go to facebook.com/advertising, you can access. And then there's the Power Editor as well. And usually the Facebook Ads Manager requires you to work with a Facebook account manager. You're invoiced for your ads. There's usually a minimum monthly spend that's required to have a Facebook account manager and having the Facebook Ads Manager interface as well. But they've sort of lowered those walls quite a bit over the last year or so, basically since they went public. And then there's if you're doing about $100,000 or more a month in advertising, an ads management platform starts to make sense at that point. And those platforms, you pay for the ads, but you also pay for the management. It's usually a percentage of the total ad spend. There's a lot of advantages when you get into the ads management platform. But for someone starting out, I think there's a couple different things to focus on. Number one, get some wins out of the gate really quickly. And so the best way to do that is to start with an engagement strategy and a community growth strategy. So create like campaigns that are targeting non-fans or friends of fans that might have interests in your product or service. And so when you target them and you start to grow your community base, it will grow pretty quickly. And it's usually a really low bid rate at first. It gets more expensive the larger your community gets because your pool of available candidates or prospects diminishes, so it starts to get more expensive the larger your community gets. And then start with sponsored stories or promoted posts or boosted posts and target your fans and friends of fans. And that will drive your engagement. So what's really important to know is that if you create an ad, the first 24 hours of the ad, the performance during the first 24 hours of the ad dictates the performance of the rest of the time that the ad runs.
Wow.
So let's say you have two ads that are running. One ends up having a really high engagement rate within the first 24 hours, and your bid is 75 cents per impression, per 1,000 impressions. Add two, you're bidding, let's say, $4 per 1,000 impressions, and it's targeting the same audience, but it doesn't have the same engagement rate in the first 24 hours. that ad actually gets penalized because there's no engagement or there's a low level of engagement. Even though you have a more competitive bid at the $4 per thousand impressions, because it's not as engaging, it actually has it will impact performance negatively. So time decay will kick in really quickly. That ad lifetime may only live to be 2 or 3 days at the most. Plus, you're spending a whole lot of money on a really low performing ad. So when you look at getting started, you want to start with stuff that's really engaging and that's going to drive activity and that you know people are going to associate with, and get those early wins out of the gate and get the really high engagement in that first 24-hour period.
That's a really good tip. So talk to us a little bit about the different models, the cost per click, the pay-per-click, the pay-per-impression, and the bidding strategy. I know for some people it can be very fuzzy in terms of they get all the way to the bottom of the ad and it says, like, how much do you want to pay per day? Do you have, like, a recommendation in terms of a good starting off point, like $10 per day, $20 per day, or do you have to get deeper into actually figuring out how much you're going to pay per click?
Yeah, you know, I wish I knew how to answer that perfectly and had a silver bullet. The reality is, you know, all of those algorithms on the back end are changing all the time. So just when you think you have it figured out, something changes on the back end and your performance takes a nosedive and you end up going on a dragnet hunt to try to figure out what to fix and how to fix it.
Yeah.
We've recently gone through this a couple of different times where we just weren't using our budget whatsoever and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And then come to find out a default setting in the Facebook Ads Manager interface had changed from a CPM or a CPC to a CPM. And we didn't realize that default had changed. We were just sort of on autopilot for the most part and plugging away. And then just by realizing that change had been made, we hop back up into our normal performance. To answer your question about what's the difference between CPM, CPC, CPI, OPE, and every other acronym that's there when you get there, setting a daily budget or a lifetime budget for the ad, it really depends on what your priority is and what you want out of the ad.
Right.
So, and how large your audience is. If your audience is a couple hundred people versus a couple million people, your budget has to reflect that scope and scale. I think, you know, for smaller businesses, starting out at $5 a day, $10 a day, those are good places to start if you only have like 2 or 3 ads running. If you have like 10 ads running or 20 ads running, of course you want to run ads closer to $3 a day or $5 a day just to get some wins out of the gate. And then what another key thing about that, Facebook will use your inventory as it's available and when the optimal time is to dump the inventory. So
wow.
if you start an ad at, let's say, 4 p.m., and it ends up getting approved by Facebook at 8 p.m., and it kicks off at 8 p.m., and you're a product or service where most of your customers are on Facebook during the hours of 9 to 5, you've just dumped your inventory during hours that you can't utilize.
Right.
So you want to queue up your ads in tandem with when your prospects or your audience will be online, will be on Facebook. For us, we're working adults, and they're online learners, so they're accessing the classroom at night and on the weekends. So we want that inventory to run at night and on the weekends. So we will queue up our ads so that they're running at night and on the weekends more than during the week. We still have ads that run during the day, but we definitely optimize for the time when our community is online.
So how many different ads do you guys run at any given time at the same time?
A lot. So we sort of have two different teams. We have a lead gen team that manages lead gen specific. So a lot of those are the direct response ads.
Mm-hmm.
And then my team manages the like campaigns, the engagement campaigns, which are the promoted posts, the sponsored stories. And then we also use custom audiences for conversion ads, because I sit on the conversion team. And so my team, we can run anywhere from about 10 ads a day to, I mean, there's been some times where we've had upwards of 50 ads running a day, just because of all the intricacies of targeting, geo-targeting, interest targeting. We want to test this state versus that state or this country versus that country. Or we want to run it against the same audiences and test CPC versus CPM bidding at the same price and see which one performs better.
Yeah, talk just a little bit about the geo-targeting and all of the different options for targeting audiences.
Yeah, so one of the things that I absolutely love about Facebook advertising, and a lot of the other social media platforms are starting to pick this up, like LinkedIn and Twitter, are the different targeting options that are available. So you can target your posts organically with geo-targets, but you can also include your ads, set your ads to be geo-targeted as well. In addition to geo-targeting, which you can do at the country level, the state level, or the city level, and it's based off of your IP address that you're logged into Facebook from or you're connected to Facebook from, is what the geo-target will align with. You can also do interest targeting. And so interest targeting is phenomenal. This is a great way to get into some untapped markets. If you're a product that has or a service that has a partnership with another company, you can add that company as an interest target. Or their products or the category that company is, you can add as an interest target. I think with the new hashtags on Facebook, I think I'm speculating here. I don't know this for sure, but I'm speculating, as everyone else, that hashtags are going to get included as a targeting option.
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
Yeah. So interest targeting, you can target competitors. So people that have interest in your competitors, that's another great way to tap into some markets, especially if you have a message that's around, you know, switching from brand X to my brand would, you know, does blah, 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 or we offer a blah, blah, blah discount for switching from Chevy to Toyota.
So how do you do that? Is there like an option to like select a Facebook page of another company, or does it just go off of how does that work?
Yeah, so you just type the word in actually. So when you start typing a word in, let's say you start typing in, I'm like looking around my house to see. Like,
so you could do.
Barn.
I was gonna say BlackBerry versus iPhone. I'm sorry, I just saw Dana come into the chat.
You can actually target. Another targeting option is by your mobile device. It will pick up your mobile device. So you can serve up ads only to iPhone users or only to Android users. Just kind of
know
if people have an app.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So let's say you're Pottery Barn. So one of your competitors is Pier 1. So you can actually start to type in home goods or home products, and then a whole bunch of keywords will pop up in relationship to that, and you can just go through and select all of them. Or you can put a hashtag in front of it, and it will gather every sub-interest word underneath of that. Or you can just type in the word Pier 1.
Right.
If you type in the word Pier 1, anyone that has recently mentioned something about Pier 1 or says that they have favorited or they're interested in the interest section of their profile, Pier 1 is mentioned, they would start to see that ad.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so recently used terms as well. So a lot during, like, a lot of the political elections,
right.
People would take ads out against their opponent's name. So person A versus person B. So you start taking out the person that you're running against. So if someone mentions that person in a post as a status update, they are probably going to see a post about them in the near future.
Yep. Now, talk to me a little bit, or talk to us a little bit. I feel like I'm, like, getting to pick
your
brain.
Oh, go for it.
I forgot there's, like, an audience listening also. Talk to us a little bit about ad copy. And the little picture is so small. It's, like, 100 pixels by whatever for the, like, the side-sponsored stories and all of that. In terms of selecting an image and the type of wording that you want to put in and the limited amount of character that you have for your ad copy.
Yeah. I mean, this is where I go crazy some days. I have a hard enough time trying to fit something in 140 characters, and then you want me to fit it in 92 characters? So if it's a direct response ad, so those would be like lead gen ads, the title is 25, they keep changing it. I think it's 25 characters now, and then 90 characters in the body. And then the preview image is 100 by 72 pixels, which is so tiny. And then Facebook has this 20% rule that also drives a lot of people crazy. But the 20% rule actually does not apply to all ad types.
Oh.
Which is important to know. So if you want to create a compelling image, obviously don't load it up with a ton of text. You know, I think that probably goes without saying. But something that's catchy that might not be directly associated with the brand, it's a great way to test some off-brand images. So, you know, if you're selling a car, putting a picture up of a car is pretty standard. So you might want to put a picture up of a dog with a birthday hat on or something like that. And that's something that adds a little bit of a shock value, or you might not necessarily directly assimilate that with an auto dealer or auto services product out of the gate.
Right.
But it caught your attention because it's cute and funny and it's something everyone can assimilate to. And it's not an image that you haven't seen 100 times in display ads and in TV and in the magazines and everywhere else.
Yeah, I once read that if I was reading a bunch about this, and it said if you use an image that has, like, a female, you know, like a good-looking female, that those ads of good-looking females get many, many, many more clicks than any other ads, no matter what the brand is. I guess that makes
sense. I wonder why that is. Oh, what does that say about our society, right?
Oh, I know. So that's like, oh, well, you know, I Googled, like, you know, what's been put in my Facebook ad? And it's like, women. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's really easy to lean on stock photography there, especially for attractive women.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people are using stock photography. And, you know, one of the things that I'm starting to see is just rough and dirty cuts. And I don't mean rough and dirty and the naked woman kind of thing. But, you know, with Vine and Instagram, people are, you know, everyone's a journalist, right? So people are just taking these random pictures or creating these really short videos that are choppy. They're not professional. And those end up performing a million times better than the formal pictures that you had a professional photographer come in and do, or in a studio, or the stock photography. So sometimes, you know, just taking a picture with your cell phone, and most cell phones today have better cameras than, or are equivalent to the fancy cameras, and just taking a picture out the door of something different. It doesn't necessarily always have to be shock value, but just something different and unexpected, especially in that right rail. There can be up to 7 ads all at one time in that right rail. So how are you going to separate yourself from the other six people that are there, especially if you're advertising in the evening and on weekends?
Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see that would be challenging. So for the ad copy itself, I'm assuming, like you kind of already alluded to this, but based on what your goals are, that's going to pretty much determine the language that you use there. So if you're looking for people to click on it, you have to have some sort of call to action. That's, you know, do you put something in there that actually says, like, click here for, or could you stick more to just, you know, using that space for whatever it is you're advertising, hoping that people are going to know that they should click on it?
Are you guys there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. One of my phones dropped off, and I was like, uh-oh. Sorry about that.
We're here.
Good thing I had backup. So I think that's actually a great thing to test. I think some brands probably lend themselves better to leaving it a little open-ended, like a Warby Parker, for example. They are knocking it out of the park with their ads right now. The ad doesn't necessarily tell you to come visit the website to pick out a pair of eyeglasses or sunglasses. But you're also hearing about Warby Parker just about everywhere else. And so you see the ad with Warby Parker and you kind of want to click on it. So I would say that's a great thing to test. You know, one of the things that's actually kind of good about social is that it is social and it is so literal. Telling people, priming behavior by telling people exactly what you want them to do sort of makes the job pretty easy as a marketer.
Right.
Oh, you want me to tell you to click on this? No problem. That takes up about 15 characters, which then makes it difficult to find the cool, interesting, catchy little phrase to add to the front of that. So I come from the notion of test everything until you find out what works, and then as soon as you figure out what works, keep testing even more, because the algorithm is going to change, consumer behavior is going to change, and as you guys know, as a user of Facebook, your user preferences have probably evolved as the Facebook advertising technologies have evolved. You sort of cater towards it. Or the different ads that people are running, you sort of get tired of seeing the same things over, and you become fatigued from those types of messages.
Right.
So I would say with ad copy, especially if it's a direct response ad, you definitely want to stand out from the crowd and be a little bit different. And the good thing about Facebook is that you can be – it's an area where you can be a little bit outside of your branding guidelines. You don't have to be so rigid following every single branding guideline rule. So you can get a little outside the box. You can be a little bit more social. You can spaghetti test it. We're spaghetti testing every day. Someone was asking me the other day, what should I do here from another university? And I was like, I have no idea. Just start testing. Like, just throw some stuff up there.
Well, can you run, like A-B split testing or even, like, a three? Like, can you kind of do all of the same targeting for an ad, but then do it like two or three times and just do like a different picture or change up the language a little bit and then see which one performs better?
Absolutely. So there's the three parts to the ad. There's the picture, the title, and the description.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a picture, a title, and a description for, let's say, three or four ads, you now have a myriad of ad options that you can test.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely test everything. We like to test.
Right.
But definitely run a couple different, especially if you have the budget to do it, which I realize not everyone has the budget to do it, in which case test with one image, one title, one body copy, and then flip out the title or flip out the body copy. And it really saves work, too. And you can start to see which body copies perform better over time. And if you only run an ad for two or three days, you can switch that out pretty quickly.
So you have to run them one at a time. You can't, like, cue all three to go and then see which one performs the best while they're kind of running. I guess they would conflict with one another that way.
You can run all three together at the same time. And so if one starts performing better than the others, especially within that first 24 hours, it's going to ultimately perform better than everything else because of that sort of prioritized preference algorithm. But you can run all three, and so it's going to hit the same audience. You could have it hit the same audience. You could have it test. You could test different copy with different audiences, although that's not a pure perfect test.
Right.
But it's an option. You could definitely do that. It's also a good way to test, like, an emerging market. So if you're looking at something in, you know, in Houston, and then you're wondering if that product or service, if there's a market for it in Austin, which is close but not entirely close, you could test the same ad targeting Houston and then target the Austin city limit and say, okay, Austin compared to Houston performs just as well, so there's a demand for this. So maybe I need to do some more market research in Austin to determine if it makes sense for me to take my services, if it's a restaurant, open a second restaurant or a second store or something like that in Austin.
Gotcha. That makes good sense. Now, I have a question for you. So we can see, obviously, especially that the ads that you're running for Walden and the other universities are successful just by the growth. So people are actually clicking on them and taking the action that you want. Do you personally, when you see ads on yours, do you click on them a lot?
I love when people ask this question. I am addicted to ads. I'm addicted.
I thought you were going to – I had a feeling you were going to say the same thing. But.
I take screenshots, especially of competitors. I take screenshots of their ads. I'm like, dang it, they did a really good job with that one. Or, man, they totally took our idea. pay a closer eye to competitors or at least what's in the industry space.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely one of those people that if I'm not interested in the ad type, I exit out and I say, I'm not interested because I'm not in your demographic.
Right.
Like, don't serve up Pampers ads to me because that's never happening in my lifetime. Like, not happening.
Ever.
So I let them know, like, no more Pampers ads.
Well, that's what I say. You know, when I teach my classes, I get a lot of people saying, well, I don't like to see those ads. Well, I feel like I don't want to do the ads because people don't like them. And I think it just depends. I think, because, like, I do. I feel like, for the most part, the companies are doing an effective job in targeting, and that when I do see those ads, it is something that I'm interested in. So
I totally agree.
Yeah, and I kind of like looking over there to see, hey, is there something new I need to learn about? You know, not like learn about, but, you know, maybe there's a product or a company I don't even know about that I should know about, and they're targeting me, you know, effectively. So I was,
yeah, totally. I mean, a marketer is always going to be more sensitive to being marketed, right? So, you know, you start to look at non-marketers. And so I asked my mom, I'm like, Mom, you know, do you see these ads? Do you, like, actually see them?
Right.
Do you click on them? Like, what do you do? And so she does. So I'm like, okay, she's not a marketer. She's an educator. So,
right.
You know, if moms click happy, then, okay, it's working. So the cool thing, mom is happy, everybody's happy. The cool thing about Facebook, though, is they keep finding new ways to get ads in front of people. I am slightly concerned about ad fatigue and that people are going to start to become just so anti-ads, almost like what happened to MySpace. I think it's going to be really difficult to take down a monstrosity like Facebook, like what happened to MySpace. I think MySpace was probably ahead of the social curve in the first place, so it was a little bit easier for that to collapse. But I think the innovation team at Facebook is doing a really cool job at finding different ways to target audiences. And then you look at the desktop options versus the mobile options, which we didn't even talk about. And then, you know, the matrix sort of blows out even more from there. And the neuromarketing, I love neuromarketing, the ways that you can get inside heads of consumers. So it could be very literal with direct response ads, but you can also run these engagement posts and these unpublished posts, which are ultimately, you know, brand awareness, brand recognition, and behavior priming subliminally.
Right, yeah. So much good information. We might have to have you back for a part two, Katie.
Absolutely.
Jeff, do you have any final questions for Katie before we move into Geek It Out?
No, I think my head's about ready to explode with all this information that she has shared.
There's so much with the ad space, and I know we didn't even touch upon half of it. I really want to learn more about the Facebook exchange and the custom audiences and all of that. So we'll talk offline about a part two.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's Twitter and LinkedIn.
Oh, my God.
It just goes on and on and on.
I see a series coming on, AK. I think this would be a really – it's a good summer series to have so that everybody's ready for that fall marketing. So I think we just make an executive decision now. We're going to do a series of these on advertising.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's getting so much harder organically to get things seen that you do have to almost take that race, kind of get above the noise. But anyway, all right, Katie, well, thank you so very much for all the information. And if you could please tell our audience where they can reach you online, LinkedIn, Twitter, anything that you want to share with us.
Sure. So, again, thank you guys so much for having me on. This was a ton of fun, and I'm happy to come back and get chatty with you too anytime. So if you have any questions, you can definitely follow up on Twitter. I'm at Katie B. Roberts. And then LinkedIn.com/in/KatieBRoberts. And surprise, it is Facebook.com/Katie. There's a little trick here, Katie.B.Roberts.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Katie. And we are going to move into our – oh, I know you don't have it with, but Katie did mention to us before the show that she has a tool that she's going to share with me that I can disseminate to you guys on what you can do to make sure that your ad picture doesn't have more than 20% text. So if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/socialgeekradio, we'll make sure we put that up as well. So, again,
great.
Thank you. And you're welcome to hang on while we move into Geek It Out, or you're free to go, whatever you'd like to do.
Awesome. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks, Katie.
I'm like completely on information overload right now. It's like taking notes, couldn't tweet as much because I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss something with all the good information. So that was awesome. All right, so Geek It Out. What do I have for us this evening? Okay, the first one, sorry guys, is just for girls, but it's super cool and girls are super cool, so I'm going to mention it anyway. It's called Swerve, or Swerve, I don't know. It's S as in Sam, V-E-R-V-E. So I'll throw it in the chat box here. And Swerve is trying to bring together female bloggers, online influencers with companies and brands. So if, you know, you're just a blogger or you're highly influential in Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, you can come in here, you can create an account for free, put up a little bit of a bio. And then brands can also come in, they can post campaigns. So they can say, this is what we have, this is what we're doing, and we're looking for people to post about it on Twitter, come to our Facebook page, engage with us, write a blog post about it, et cetera. And at some point, there is a cost associated with the campaign for companies. I believe it's free for them to post, but then at some point, if they want the bloggers to actually engage with them, I think it's like you know, like $90 a month, and then like $200 a month, depending on the number of people that they want involved with their campaign. So I think it's relatively new, but I've been testing the waters a little bit. I set up a profile and looking through some of the campaigns to see if there's something worth participating in. So I think it's an interesting concept, and I can imagine with all the people online these days that there might be competitors to this site cropping up. But I think it's a really good opportunity for brands as well.
Well, do you see this as a competitor to the Project Eve group?
I don't know. It could be. I haven't dealt with in that community too much to see if, you know, brands are coming there and doing this campaign type thing. In my mind, this is much simpler than their platform just because they have the forum and everything else going on. This is both connecting the brands and the bloggers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's something to keep an eye on. If you're interested from either side, you should check it out.
We'll have to look at it. Okay.
So that's that. I had a new favorite app of the week. It's called View. It's just VU. And I know it's available for iPhone and Android. I don't know about the other networks. It doesn't seem to have a website, or at least not one that I can find. So I found it in the Google Play Store, and I found it on iTunes. But it's sort of a news and magazine reader, where it has a magazine-type feel. I don't know that you can actually read magazines on it. It's very simplistic. I really like the layout of it. You can go through and you can select news by topic. You can pick favorites. You can see what's trending, and you can look at recommended reading from various categories, from health, business, technology, fitness, all sorts of different things. I just think it's cute when I log in. It says, "Hi, AK. The weather is blah blah blah." Where you?
So it's not like Flipboard or Zite.
It is. It's a very similar concept to both of those, but it's not as feature intense. So you don't have. There's not something where you go and you set up options and you hook up accounts or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just showing you what's popular, basically. And what's being clicked on most across the web. So I like it for the simplicity factor. I kind of get overwhelmed with the other ones, but there's just so much to look at. So I've been checking this out. As you can imagine, it's all about the royal baby right now, but maybe in a week or two it might be a little bit more interesting to look at. Not that that's not interesting, but you know what I'm saying. The next site I have is actually one that our guest from last week mentioned in passing while he was talking about something and kind of acted like we all knew about it, we'd all heard about it, and I hadn't. So I wrote it down. I didn't want to stop him because whatever he was saying at the time, I wanted him to keep going. I didn't want to interrupt him. But it's called news.me. And he did say that it's like a spinoff or it morphed from another site. And I did have a site similar to this that I used to use for Twitter, and I can't even remember what it was called, so that might have been the one he was talking about. But it's news.me, and I think I hooked up my Facebook account, and I hooked up my Twitter account, and once a day, it sends me an email with, like, 5 or 6 stories that the accounts that I'm following are sharing on Twitter. I guess it pulls the ones that are most frequently being commented on or tweeted or something like that, so... It's cool. It's very simple. It's just another way to kind of consume information from your network. It's very similar, I think, to the Twitter Discover section. If you go in there and you see what people are sharing, that it's cool for you. But I like to have my news and information come to me instead of me going out and having to scan for it. So I'm more apt to look at something like this than going after it myself. So I thought it was cool. And
that is cool.
Credit to our guest from last week for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Okay, and she's yelling at us that we have to wrap it up. So we're going to have to wrap it up, and we'll do this again next week. So good night, everybody, and thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week or hear you next week.
All right. Yep. All right. Thanks. Bye, everybody.
Bye, okay.
It's a very geeky show. Can you listen to me? Cosmic.